You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to the Earth Station MCU podcast, your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, the Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, and so much more. Visit us at our Facebook group, Earth Station MCU, at earthstationmcu.wordpress.com, or email us at earthstationmcu@gmail.com. Hello, Marvel Universe. My name is Jennifer Hartshorn, and welcome back to another episode of Earth Station MCU. Tonight, we're going to be talking about all the news that's come out recently, including a lot of interesting stuff that's just come out in the last couple of days. And of course, we're going to be reviewing Ant-Man later on. And needless to say, we will spoil the heck out of it. So if you haven't seen it yet, then go see it. What's wrong with you? Go do that now. So, without further ado, I'd like to welcome my co-host, John. So, how you doing? Hello!
Doing all right, just, painting is annoying when you're working on costumes. You read the instructions, yeah, all right, this will be ready for you to touch in an hour, but it needs 24 hours to dry, so don't paint anything else over it yet.
Oh, jeez. Well, not to mention...
I'll wait another day.
Yeah, I'm sure that the humidity doesn't help. And if it's anything as bad as it is in Atlanta, I don't know if that like slows down the drying process at all.
I don't know. It still works out pretty well.
So how?
I think they assume like more humid temperatures for drying. Like that, I think they assume the worst case scenario will tell you how long something's going to dry.
Okay, that's good. That's good. And this is for your Vision costume?
Yes.
Awesome. So how's that coming?
It's coming. I've been working on some more on the armor pieces, and the other guys have their parts to play. And
awesome,
it's coming along. So I haven't hit panic mode yet.
That's good. That's good. You've got, I don't know, how long is it now?
Oh, 5 weeks.
5 weeks. That's
six. Well, 6 weeks, kind of, I guess.
Do you have any other costume stuff that you're working on for Dragon Con, or are the others pretty much all taken care of?
One more thing that I'm going to try to get in at the last minute, something related to Mad Max Fury Road.
Ah, okay, cool. And you've got, of course, you've got Coulson and you've got Captain Cold, right?
Yes.
Awesome.
And Jim Gordon.
Oh, cool. Cool. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Alrighty. And for those of you listening, we're going to be doing a whole episode on cosplay coming up. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Hopefully I'll be able to recruit some very special guests.
Excellent, excellent. I am excited about it. All right, cool. So we've got a lot of stuff that's going on that's come out for news lately. One thing that that we heard just, I guess it was late last week, that was a big disappointment for me, is that we're not getting a director's cut of Age of Ultron. Or at least that's not something that they've got planned. And it just seems like there's so much that had to get cut out of that. Mm-hmm. You know, like all the stuff involving Thor, you know, that you know, would have made his plotline actually make sense. But it sounds like they're just going to stick some DVD extras on and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very disappointing to hear that we're not going to get the director's cut, because I want the ending where Quicksilver survives.
Yes.
You know, I just think it was kind of crappy, because he filmed that, and then was like, okay, if Kevin Feige's okay with it, I keep it in. If Kevin Feige is not okay with it, then he survives. And Kevin Feige was, you know, okay with
killing
Quicksilver
him off.
Dying.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. But and Whedon has said that he doesn't want to, and it's a combination of artistically he doesn't want, you know, to mess with what is already going on. You know, like once you've done it, stop going back and messing with it. And then he's also said, well, it's also 'cause I'm lazy, and that sounds like a lot of work. So
Yeah, and you know, as much as we might want to be upset with him for saying that, at the same time, I mean, we heard the stories about how hard he worked putting it together.
Oh, sure.
So maybe give it a few years before we approach him on
that.
Yeah,
that's valid. That's valid. Let the wounds heal a little bit. I was very happy, on the other hand, to hear that Tilda Swinton is confirmed for Doctor Strange. So that's going to be cool, yep, to be playing the Ancient One. And I'll be interested to see how they handle it. I don't, in general, like whitewashing characters, mm-hmm, but they're kind of, it's not just changing the race. They're changing the race, the gender, the whole background and everything.
Right. They're essentially treating the Ancient One as a title that's passed down rather than any kind of specific individual.
Right, right, exactly. Another bit of news, well, sort of news. Wesley Snipes is saying that he wants to come back and play Blade in the MCU.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
As good as he was in those movies...
20 years ago.
I think everybody is forgetting about Blade Trinity and his craziness on that.
Yeah.
I mean, he made director David Goyer run out and hire a bunch of tough guy bikers to pretend to be his bodyguards so that Snipes would leave him alone. And then Snipes would only communicate with him by post-it notes signed Blade.
Yeah, there's being in character, and then there's just taking it a little bit too far.
I mean, you know, maybe prison mellowed him out a bit, but I don't know.
Well, you know, it certainly did good things for Robert Downey Jr., but I don't know. I don't think that... I liked the first Blade movie.
Mm-hmm.
I am trying to remember because I haven't seen it since. I believe I liked the second one. But, you know, it was good, but I think that it's time to move on, you know? And when you've got... You know, like, Robert Downey Jr. has been, you know, playing Iron Man, and he's 50, but Wesley Snipes is probably older than 50, isn't he?
Yeah, but you know what? He doesn't look that much older. I mean, he does look older, and if you're kind of an immortal daywalker,
right,
eventually that shows, but...
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not excited about it, but Marvel does have the rights to Blade, whereas a lot of their other properties are still mm-hmm, still at other studios. So it's possible it could happen, but I'm not super excited about that personally. And then we mentioned in our last episode about the Dub Smash Wars going on.
Yes.
And there was a long lag. It looked like Clark Gregg and company had pretty much decisively won with their We Are the Champions one. Although I think did Bad Blood come after that, or was that?
No. Bad Blood was
okay
before. You know, it's like even Hayley Atwell admitted it with LFCC this past weekend.
Yeah.
That, you know, that was kind of devastating for her,
right,
but
it's like,
it sounds like she managed to come back.
Yeah, exactly. This is people that take their jerking around very seriously. Apparently, she and James Darcy were like, how can we possibly top that? That's impossible. And they were like, well, if we could get Chris Evans to do it, that'd be great, but he's in Atlanta filming. And then they kind of looked at each other and said, let's fly to Atlanta.
Yeah.
So I had gotten all excited when I saw that because I was like, oh my God, does that mean that, you know, Hayley Atwell and James Darcy are here in Atlanta, you know, and they must be on set with Chris because he's in his, you know, in his Captain America outfit and everything.
Right.
And I was like, oh, maybe they're both in, you know, a flashback scene or something in Civil War, but no, they just flew down for like the afternoon to film that one 7-second video, but it's a good one.
Yes, and you know it definitely wins so far. So I'm really hoping that at some point Clark Gregg gives Robert Downey Jr. a call,
mm-hmm,
and says, "Hey, are you gonna let them win like this?"
Yeah, that'd be cool if they can pull that off. But yeah, they're definitely still filming here in Atlanta. There've been a couple of, it killed me because there was a call a couple of weeks ago for and they needed people to do fittings right then, but it was going to be filming next week, actually, for college professors and college students to be extras. And I'm like, no, that's my job. Not fair. But
I know we can't just run and like go do these things as much as we would like
to. Boy, I really wish I could, but well.
Stupid being responsible.
I know, stupid having a job and things, but
I know.
We got some new writers for Spider-Man, which is a good thing.
Yes, mm-hmm. we did. John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein mm-hmm. are going to be the writers on the Spider-Man movie, which Marvel has said they want this one to be like a John Hughes sort of film.
Right. You know, it's going to be putting more, you know, high school age and things like that.
Right.
And, you know, I'm from the generation that has, you know, a lot of very fond memories of John Hughes, but we'll see.
Hey, you know, I grew up on the tail end of John
sure,
Hughes movies.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm not unaware.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Although it's...
Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horns.
Yeah. Yes. So I looked at those names and I'm like, John Francis Daley. Where do I know that from? I know that name from somewhere. And he's the guy that played Sweets on Bones.
Yeah, I know, and I'm still bitter about that.
About him leaving the show, or
yeah, about how he left the show.
Yeah.
I don't think the writers know how to get a character to leave a show besides killing them.
Yeah. Very true, very true. But it'll be interesting. You know, they've got some work under their belt, and it's mostly pretty broad comedies. But, you know, one thing that I always say that is part of what makes the MCU awesome is it's like they pick a film genre for every new movie, and they're making every possible film genre as a superhero movie. So, you know, mm-hmm. like Ant-Man was a heist movie, and Winter Soldier was an espionage movie, and things like that. So we're gonna get a John Hughes movie. So that will be interesting, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I'm certainly looking forward to it. And, I mean, whenever they set out to do kind of a genre-type film for one of their superhero movies, they succeeded.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think you mentioned that you had some news about tie-in merchandise for like some Lego stuff for Ant-Man.
Oh yeah. Because I mentioned I got the Ant-Man Lego set a couple mm-hmm. weeks ago, and one of the interesting things about it, you know, they included two figures, both in Ant-Man suits of Hank and Scott, and it was kind of like, oh, you know, is he going to suit
yeah.
up? Is he going to be part of the final battle? And not so much luck as we saw in mm-hmm. the movie. It's more just anytime we see Hank in the suit, it's a flashback.
Right.
And that's probably why they included him, even though his figure is obviously him older.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. So no Hope as the Wasp in there, because I guess she hasn't, you know, suited up with that yet, so.
Well, yeah, not yet, but it is coming.
Yeah, definitely.
And, I mean, even Kevin Feige has said in interviews that you'll see Hope as the Wasp in a Phase 3 movie.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. You know, and I figure, you know, either she could have a quick cameo in Civil War, that's possible. But it sounds mm-hmm. like between Infinity War 1 and 2, they're gonna get everybody in that's ever been a hero, so.
What do you mean, everyone?
Everyone!
Yes, Gary Oldman, he's the man. But we also got a little bit of news that Ava DuVernay, I'm not
yes.
sure if I'm saying
yes.
that right, she was the Selma director that was looking like she was going to be possibly helming Black Panther, and not so much, apparently. We already knew that she wasn't doing it, but it looks like it came down to, you know, artistic freedom, basically.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to be a point of contention between the studio and the directors,
yeah.
Because obviously ordinarily I would not be in favor of the studio having so much control, But when you're trying to build a universe like this and you need that sort of cohesion, you need to be able to put those stipulations in place on the director saying you can't kill this person. You got to do this with right. this person. This person has to show mm-hmm. up. And a lot of directors really don't like that.
Yeah.
They don't like the studio coming in telling them how to make a movie.
Right, exactly. You know,
and
one of my favorite directors, not the best movie in the MCU, but I really loved Kenneth Branagh, who did mm-hmm. the first Thor movie. But, you know, we're getting to the point where even though Thor is, you know, after Guardians of the Galaxy, that's probably the property that has the most potential to just have no tie-ins.
Right.
But, you know, but...
It'll be a little hard to get everybody out to Asgard.
This is true, but, you know, I think that there are still going to be, no matter what, any of these properties at this point, there's going to be some crossover stuff. And it's interesting because a lot of the things that I would have assumed were just sort of... tacked on, and well, this is getting a little bit into Ant-Man, but we're hearing mm-hmm. about, of course, Edgar Wright had worked on the movie initially, and then he parted company from them, and
right.
I've made some assumptions about what kind of stuff was his and what kind of stuff wasn't, and it, you know, I wasn't right about all that, and we can get into that later, but the mm-hmm. big thing is, I think it boiled down to things like including Falcon, you know, that he had a movie that he wanted to make and he didn't want to have to, you know, have a lot of tie-ins.
Right. And part of the problem was when he started on the movie was still in phase one.
Yeah, it was going to be like right after Hulk or something.
Yeah, it was going to be either right after Iron Man or right after Hulk. And, you know, things got delayed so much. In the meantime, this universe popped
right.
up.
Right.
And it became intertwined.
Yeah.
And they didn't, you know, they didn't include Ant-Man and Wasp in the Avengers because Edgar Wright was still working on the movie.
Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, one other thing that is not Ant-Man related. Martin Freeman has made a couple statements on what he might be doing with Civil War, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Basically, yeah, somebody asked him if he was going to take on his Fargo accent
right.
that he did for the Fargo TV show. Ugh. And he said, no, this isn't going to be Midwestern. It's going to be, East America. Mm-hmm. Based on that clue of him saying it's East America, they think it's going to be, they still think it's going to be Everett Ross, mm-hmm. who was
was he the Wakanda almost like represent, an, like liaison or something?
Yeah. He's almost like a State Department rep. Mm-hmm. Who is, you know, the expert on Wakanda.
Okay. So. That'll be cool. That'll, you know, that would show how he's going to tie in to Civil War, and then also that he's going to have the potential to be in Black Panther as well. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were rooting for him to be tied into Doctor Strange, but not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I think he and Benedict.
How many times can we really put him and Benedict Cumberbatch together?
Yeah, exactly. I think they see enough of each other as it is. They don't need to necessarily.
Guys,
be doing
we got Sherlock.
One.
We got the Hobbit yep. movies.
Exactly.
We don't need this too.
Right, right. And one thing that I think is interesting is that he's said that the character works for the government. He hasn't actually said. If it's Everett Ross definitively, there's, you know, some speculation on a couple of other potential characters that he could be. But
and the one thing I've heard that I don't agree with at all is Henry Peter Gyrich.
Okay, who's that?
Gyrich is a character. He was in the comics. He's done a little. He's been in both the Avengers universe and the X-Men's universe. Mm-hmm. He shows up in the X-Men universe, he's pretty much completely government anti-mutant mm-hmm, sort of guy. Mm-hmm. Although he has been shown to have some scruples in the sense of honor. Anytime he's in the Avengers, he's usually their government liaison. Mm-hmm. And he's also a jerk.
okay.
to them too.
Well, and that's the thing about what Martin Freeman said is he said it's a very gray character, that it's, you know, not a straight up good guy or straight up bad guy. Which is nice, and you know he mentions how that's more interesting to play than just a straight up one thing or another, that he likes to play the gray areas.
Yeah, but Guy Ritchie is just too much of a complete a hole.
Right. Okay.
Whenever he shows up, as well as tensioned as he can be, mm-hmm. he's a jerk. He's the guy who pretty much marched into Avengers Mansion one day and said, these are the government's rules for how you're going to operate. Mm-hmm. We're not going to have 30 members here anymore. You all got to stream down to 7. And, you know, he just kind of was walking in there telling the Avengers what to do. And that might make sense for Civil War and kind of a new status quo for the team coming out of that movie and going into Infinity mm-hmm. War. But I just don't see Martin Freeman being that much of a dick.
Douche. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But maybe he'll surprise me. Maybe that's the whole reason he took the role in the first place.
Was to do something interesting with it.
Something different. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I'm sure he's taken enough notes from watching Benedict be Sherlock that.
Oh, of course.
He could put that on.
Oh,
if he had to.
He's a fantastic actor. I'm pretty sure he can do whatever he sends his mind to. But mm-hmm. but yeah.
I just like my everyman Martin Freeman. Okay.
Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, he'll on some level he'll always be Arthur Dent to me. So
yeah, I mean look at everybody he plays, from The Office to Sherlock to Hitchhiker's Guide, even to The Hobbit.
He's
the relatable
guy.
Person.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He's the audience identification character. So
and who knows? Maybe if he is Ross, he can be like the new Coulson, the new government agent guy who ties.
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. That's especially coming from you. I don't know that there can't be another Coulson. You know, there can't be another Fury. I mean,
if I'm okay with him, why can't it be okay?
I guess. Yeah. But
all right. Not that I am the end all be all.
No, but you know, it's good for it would be good for them to establish a few more you know, consistent characters that can cross over. But I think that's about it. Anything else you can think of for news?
Not really. I mean, there hasn't been too much else going
on.
Well,
that's a lot. that's quite a bit. We've had a lot of like I said, that was a lot of stuff about all kinds of different movies, as well as a lot of stuff dealing with Ant-Man this weekend, of course, with the mm-hmm. With the movie coming out. So I guess we'll go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be talking about Ant-Man.
The following is fully endorsed by the Needless Things Podcast and NeedlessThingsSite.com. There's just one place to go for all your podcast needs. Needless Things Podcast. Needless Things Podcast. A giant podcast of dorkery for every occasion. Thousands of subjects in every shape, size, and color. And because we eliminate the middleman, we can cast all of our pods factory direct to you. Where do you go when you want to hear about toys, movies, music, and TV? Needless Things Podcast. Needless Things Podcast. And this weekend only, take advantage of our special liquidation sale. All episodes are absolutely free. Don't forget, they make great Christmas presents. And what better way to say I love you than with the gift of a Needless Things Podcast. Needless Things Podcast. Needless Things Podcast. Hello, this is Phantom Troublemaker, president of NeedlessThingsSite.com. I like their podcast so much, I bought the company. Needless Things Podcast. One location. We're on Podbean under Uncategorized. My, where did you get that lovely podcast?
Needless Things Podcast. We talk dorkery. And that's all.
Thanks for picking me up, brother.
Well, you know, do you think I'm going to miss my Sally getting out?
Hey, how's your girl, man?
She left me.
Oh.
Yeah, my mom died, too. And my dad got deported. But I got the van.
It's nice.
Yeah, right? You wait till you see this car, because you're going to be really happy. You're going to be on your feet in no time. Watch.
I hope so.
And I got to introduce you to some people, some really skilled people.
Not interested.
Yeah, right.
No, I'm serious, man.
You know that jobs don't come easy for ex-cons, right?
I got a master's in electrical engineering, all right? I'm going to be fine.
Check it out.
Welcome to Baskin-Robbins. Would you like to try our mango fruit blast?
Welcome back, and now we are going to be talking about Ant-Man. And it had, you know, it had kind of mixed advance reviews. Henry Hanks from CNN had posted basically, this is better than Guardians of the Galaxy. This is like possibly my favorite MCU movie of all time when he got to see the advance one. So I kind of had higher hopes for it than some people did. I know that a lot of people that I've spoken to went in going, "Who the hell is Ant-Man? This sounds stupid." And those are the people that came out and went, "This is the best thing ever."
Yeah, even Paul Rudd's son, if you saw his interview on David Letterman, is like, you know, "Hey, I'm going to be a superhero," and his kids were like, "Who? Ant-Man?" His kids were like, "That sounds stupid."
pretty much. But it seems like everybody that went in, you know, kind of bracing for it to be awful, was very pleasantly surprised. So that's good. On the other hand, it didn't perform up to expectations. They were expecting it to get at least $60 million in its first weekend, and it came in just shy of that at 58. But that actually makes it the lowest opening weekend for any MCU movie, with the exception of Hulk. So that's not good. On the other hand, the cost that it took to produce was, you know, just a minuscule compared to something like Age of Ultron.
Right. And, you know, I was kind of worried when I went in on Thursday night for the 7 o'clock IMAX showing, and the theater is not half full.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh, please let people be waiting till Friday or Saturday to go see this." But when we saw it, I went back on Saturday with my brother, and you know, it was a regular sized crowd for a movie in that, for like an opening movie in that theater. And I don't know. I mean, $58 million is nothing to really, you know, blow off.
As absolutely.
Nothing.
And that's,
I mean,
that's,
it might be,
you know, for any other studio, for any other movie, that would be considered fantastic. And that's, I think it's sort of suffering. I read a couple articles today, you know, talking about the fact that, you know, people are saying, "Oh, well, this is Marvel's greatest failure," or something. It's not a failure. It's doing fine. It's going once we factor in overseas, it's going to be incredibly profitable. It's just not quite the juggernaut that some of the other properties have.
It's like saying, you know, this is the worst of Van Gogh's paintings.
Yeah, exactly. Even the worst.
You know, this is a horrible one, but you know, it's still going to fetch $1 million.
Right? Yeah. You know, it's like pizza. Even bad pizza is still pizza. You know, so
you can never have enough pizza.
This is so true. Absolutely. Well, maybe you can, but anyway.
Well, if you explode.
Yeah, if it's a Mr. Creosote thing, but anyway. Yes, getting back to the MCU, It was also an interesting article that was on IO9, which I don't always, that's not always a sentence that I would say, but about the problems, you know, that Edgar Wright had and what things that he worked on and what things he didn't. And some of those were kind of surprising. Like, I think everybody has assumed that the all the little, you know, tip monologues that Luis has, where he's saying, "I talked to this guy who talked to this guy," that seemed like a very Edgar Wright kind of thing to do, but apparently that wasn't him.
And, I mean, Hope getting the Wasp suit at the end was him.
Yes, yeah. And yes, so it's kind of surprising. The thing that blew my mind the most was that Corey Stoll said that his character wasn't that well developed in the original Edgar Wright script, but it got so much deeper in the final script, and I'm like, how could it get any more shallow than it was already?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I think, as far as the movie goes, the one thing that was really lacking was, you know, we're told the Pym particles overexposure without the helmet makes you crazy.
Right.
But we don't ever really get to see him sane.
Right. Right, exactly. And you know, presumably Hope's been working with this on him, and she's okay. You know, so
he's been, well, as we see, like, she's been kind of keeping herself up in the, like, the observation room.
Yeah.
And he's kind of, like, down on the floor, shrinking sheep.
Yeah. But, it's, that, for me, that was the big weak point, was that, I just didn't feel like we had enough of a, you know, he just seemed to be, like, kind of scenery-chewing evil, you know, just like, wah, I will do this because I can.
And I kind of like that when you do it, you know, intentionally hammy, like, you know, the same
like
night
Cal.
I saw...
yeah, on S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah.
Or I was going to say, the same night I saw, you know, Ant-Man, I went and saw Minions as well.
Oh,
and,
okay,
you know, Sandra Bullock as Scarlet Overkill is definitely hamming it up.
Well, of course, yeah.
That, you know, and that works when you're in... doing it intentionally.
Yeah, and I don't feel like he was, you know, he was hamming it up at all. I think his acting was perfectly fine, but mm-hmm. it just really felt like it was kind of out of nowhere, compared to the other characters, and compared to, you know, what they were, the degree to which they had set things up with Hank and with Scott and everything in terms of saying, hey, this is how they got to where they are, And I assumed that was something that, well, maybe there was more of that in the Edgar Rice script, and then my guess was that it got cut to put in the entire Avengers HQ sequence with Falcon.
Yeah. Which, but, I liked.
Oh, I loved it, yeah.
You know, I've just read things today that kind of wondered why it was in there, and I'm like, it was good. I mean, you brought in this part of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
You showed that the Ant-Man suit ain't nothing.
Right. It's that he's, you know, that he can go toe-to-toe with an Avenger and
right.
if not necessarily win, get out of there alive.
And that's the thing that even wakes up Hydra to, maybe this has potential.
Exactly.
Let's pay
exactly.
him double.
Yeah. And, I mean, my big thing for this movie is that I think that the tie-ins to other parts of the MCU mm-hmm. are so much more seamless in this than they are in other ones, which is not to say that they've been bad in other ones,
right.
but, you know, the fact that, you know, we start out with the 1989 S.H.I.E.L.D. meeting with digitally altered Michael Douglas and...
Yeah, I mean, he looked just like he did in The American President. It was incredible.
Yeah, I even thought, I was thinking more Wall Street, but yeah.
I was just like watching it and thinking of Andrew Shepherd, but then again, I've never really watched Wall Street all the way through.
Uh-huh.
And it's not the kind of movie that necessarily appeals to me as good
sure.
as it is.
Sure. No, that's a good point. But yeah, I thought they did a great job with the effects for that, and it was a good job of, and that was at the Triskelion, right?
Yeah, the Triskelion. Yeah, we
and
see
they were
it
just
under
building
construction.
It. Yeah, exactly. Which then got blown up in Winter Soldier. So that's a nice little bit of continuity.
And was it just me, or did it seem like, hey, we probably should have been a little grayer than she was? For somebody who had to be in her 20s in the mm-hmm. 1940s, jump ahead 40 years.
Yeah,
you know, she's only got a few streaks.
I had an aunt that actually like only started going gray after she turned 80. So you know, if I'm going to quibble with something, that's not going to be it. Probably Peggy also would probably want to, you know, look her best and probably do a little dye job to get rid of those grays. But
cool, that's that's still impressive if so. You know?
Oh sure. I thought they did a great job of. Right from the start, making it something so that it was absolutely essential to the movie. It was not like something that was tacked mm-hmm. on at all. It was definitely something that helped set the stage, and it also was something that you didn't have to know who those people were, because it got explained along the way. So if you came in being like, who the hell is Howard Stark and Peggy Carter? You mm-hmm. could still enjoy it. So we start out with that, and then we've got lots of little bitty nods here and there. There's like at one point when
right.
he turns little the first time, he like is going through a bus or something, and there's a newspaper about Sokovia, and at one point he says to Hank, The question that you always kind of feel like somebody should be asking in these, which is, I think we should call in the Avengers because we're out of our depth. And he's like, nah, they're too busy dropping cities out of the sky. You know, so the fact that it is coming in very clearly in the, you know, in the months right after Age of Ultron right. was really good.
We definitely establish when this happens.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, even with that whole scene with at the Avengers HQ, right. I love the fact that Hank Pym is like, okay, there's this warehouse in upstate New York that Howard Stark had, and, you know, you should have no trouble getting in and getting out. So it's nice that this is information that he has dating back to the 80s, and it's still relevant, but he has no way of knowing that in the last year it's turned into Avengers HQ.
I mean, I'm sure there was a press release about it somewhere.
But I don't think he would have... Well, I don't think he was necessarily following that kind of stuff, too.
I chalk it up to didn't do the research.
yeah, fair enough. But, you know, and then right down to our final stinger at the end of the credits, yeah. which is a direct lead-in to Civil War, and in fact actually came from the dailies of Civil War.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's something that is going to be in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it lets us know that the end scene where Luis is going on another one of his stories.
Right.
We can assume then that comes after what we saw in the stinger.
Right. Well, and they
so
also...
Ant-Man is occurring concurrently with whatever happens at the beginning of Civil War.
Right, right. And they also have a quick little reference in there to some guy who can climb up walls, which is a
yep.
Spidey reference, of course.
Yep.
So that was the thing I think that I was the most impressed with, is that this is very much, it's totally its own movie. You know, people have asked me, hey, I haven't seen all the other movies, I don't watch S.H.I.E.L.D., can I still go in and enjoy this? And I think you absolutely can. You
yeah.
don't have to have that backstory knowledge because it's self-contained, but if you do,
right.
it is just so well integrated into things that it's just fantastic.
And it really speaks for itself, and I mean... You can see, if you're a fan of Edgar Wright and Joe Cornish movies,
mm-hmm.
and if you're a fan of things written by Paul Rudd and Adam McKay, you can see the everybody's influence
right.
Coming to play in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And their styles, I think, actually mesh very well together.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as evidenced by the fact that I would have sworn up and down that Luis's monologues must have been an Edgar Wright thing, because there were... there's a specific sequence I'm thinking of in Shaun of the Dead where he's saying, well, this person who knows this person who knows this person. But no, that was actually Paul Rudd and company, so that's
yeah,
pretty cool.
I mean, speaking of Luis, can we just, you know, give some props to Michael
absolutely.
Pena? And I mean, because just about everything that I've ever seen him do,
mm-hmm.
it's all like straight drama.
Oh, really?
Yeah, whether it's like End of Watch... Was that the movie, like him and Jake Gyllenhaal?
I have no idea.
Hold on, I'm going to look it up real quick. Because most of Michael Pena's stuff has been these big, you know, kind of dramatic films. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it was End of Watch is the film that he did with... Jake Gyllenhaal, where they're L.A. police officers. He's in American Hustle. He
mm-hmm.
was in the World War II tank movie Fury.
Okay.
He was in the movie Shooter. He's in all these kind of more serious
right.
films. So this was the first time that I'd seen him do comedy.
Yeah, and I mean, right from the first line where, you know, he's like, oh, hey, how's your girl doing?
Oh, man, she left me. Oh, sorry. Yeah, my mom died. And my dad got deported. I got the van, though.
Yes, exactly. It's like, on the plus side, I got the van, and that's all that matters. So, he's fantastic. I don't think there's a bad performance in this, you know, although that's, you know, usually that's the case with all of them. The acting and directing is always, you know, up to par for the most part with MCU stuff. Like I said, my only beef with the writing slash directing slash editing is I just did not feel like there was enough background for Cross to explain why he loses it.
Yeah, and he did well, all things considered.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite line is when he's in Cassie's bedroom,
mm-hmm.
and she goes, are you a monster? He goes, do I look like a monster?
Yeah, which is, like, super creepy.
Which is like, yeah!
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
You're the one, and you're threatening our lives.
Yep. And, you know, I think that the effects were good, because that was another thing where, you know, I don't know if back in, you know, 2005, they would have had the effects to do what they did in terms of these fights where he's, like every second he's changing size. Like, having fist fights where, you know, you start the swing and you're regular size, and then you finish the swing when you're an ant-sized, and then you keep going and you turn back to regular size. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah, the visuals were absolutely impressive. I mean, just stunning, whether it was him growing or shrinking, whenever he was flying on Antony,
mm-hmm.
When running with the ants. I mean, mm-hmm. just everything about the effects in this movie was just incredible.
Oh, yeah, and I meant to ask you, you know, because you said you saw it in 3D first and then regular, was it, on
yep.
Saturday? So is this one that, if on the off chance that we have people listening who haven't seen it yet, is this worth the extra couple of bucks for 3D?
I would say no. It's another one of those movies that seems like they did the 3D after the fact.
Yeah, like an afterthought. Yeah.
And it just, you know, whenever you do that, it might give a room some depth, but it doesn't, like, nothing jumps out at you. Nothing
right.
really feels like it's coming at you.
Right, right, exactly. So that's...
I know that Infinity War, I think, is going to be filmed with 3D cameras, right?
I don't know. I haven't...
I think I read that somewhere.
That's entirely possible, but that's a ways down the road still.
No.
So, of course, I was absolutely tickled to death by the mid-credit scene. You know, that was something that, you know, the whole way through, I liked the fact that they're acknowledging, I liked the fact that Hope is the logical person to be doing this, to be wearing the suit. Because
right.
it's like, you know, are you saying you don't want me to do this because I'm a woman? You know, obviously there's backstory there with you know, him not wanting to put her in harm's way the way that his wife was and everything. But it's still, you know, as a female fan, I was like, this sucks. How mm-hmm. are they not doing this? And so I literally jumped out of my seat and was like, yes, when they showed the wasp suit. So I was...
That was super exciting for me.
A very, very happy fangirl there.
Yeah, and I love her kind of leaning on the fourth wall line.
Yep.
It's about time.
Exactly, exactly. So that was super exciting for me. So anything else that you think for high points or low points?
I want to give, you know, another shout out to the dear departed Antony.
Oh, yeah.
I've never cared about ants until this moment. So, I mean, just being able to, give the ants personality.
Yeah.
I think that was another incredible thing with Antony, with the crazy ants.
Uh-huh.
And to be able to really see them work together. Like they do in the film, I think that was another great point.
Yeah, and the one thing that I was thinking probably would have looked awesome in 3D
mm-hmm.
was when they're sneaking into the building through the water pipe.
Yeah.
And there's the thing where the ants are like make this little raft, and then there's the other ants that are making kind of like a stalagmite coming down that he grabs onto.
Right. And as much as the 3D aspect was disappointing,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I've still got the collector's souvenir ticket that the Regal Cinemas were
oh,
giving
cool.
away, and it's quite nice because it's the poster where he's shrinking,
mm-hmm.
and with a clear background, so it looks really neat. And
oh,
I'm number 2 of 500, and
yeah,
I thought my friend Gabby and I were going to be the first people up there,
uh-huh.
but I guess somebody had to have ticket number 1, even if it was seeing the movie by himself.
Wow.
One is the loneliest number. Sorry.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that they even did, in many ways, I think they did as good of a job fleshing out, you know, his other crime buddies as they did with Darren Cross. You know, the Russian guy was cool.
Yeah, David, I'm going to mispronounce his name, and he'll hate me for it if he hears this. David Dashelman, I think is his name.
I'm not sure, but yeah.
He's one of those actors. He's actually been in Marvel and DC now because he is one of the Joker's thugs in The Dark Knight.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's why I think it's like his first or second film credit.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm.
And Tip T.I. Harris as Dave was also great. I love the moment when he steals Paxton's cop car.
Yes.
To create
a
distraction.
That's awesome.
And then accidentally sets off the horn in the van.
Yep. Da, 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 da. And again, cool. That's awesome that, you know, that Luis's van plays La Cucaracha, which is the cockroach, which goes along with the ants and, you know, all that.
Yeah.
It was a fun little Disney shout out that when he walked into the building as the security guard, he was whistling It's a Small World.
Yeah, I caught that.
Yep. So
no,
yeah.
Whistling, you're supposed to be inconspicuous.
That was awesome. But, yeah, good fight scenes, you know, not the hysterical laughing that I was kind of expecting. You know, I was expecting, you know, things like, you know, the Hulk and Loki, puny god kind of stuff. And it was funny, but it wasn't like, oh, my God, I'm laughing so hard I can't breathe kind of thing.
Well, you know, they didn't go the full Paul Rudd, Adam McKay that
right.
sometimes happens in those movies.
Right. Yes, indeed. So it was very good. And I think that all the people that went in with very low expectations thought it was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I went in with, I guess, higher expectations, and I thought it was still very good. But you know, I've been telling people personally on my scale, I would say that this is, as far as Phase 2 goes, since this is the wrap up of Phase 2, I would put it definitely above Thor the Dark World and probably above Iron Man. I put it about on par with Age of Ultron, you know, because Age of Ultron had a lot of things that were good, but it had some things that were not so good too.
Yeah.
And then underneath Guardians of the Galaxy and Winter Soldier.
So I would put it it's about on par, I think, with the movies I didn't like as much. So you know, it's on par with Iron Man 3. It's on par with Thor: The Dark World.
Oh, okay.
And it's I suppose fitting of most Phase 3 movies because I think
Phase 2.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Because you know the only I think Phase 2 movies that have been really really blow your mind awesome have been Captain America: Winter Soldier and Age of Ultron. But, I mean, even like we were saying before, Marvel's worst is still awesome.
It's still great, yeah, exactly.
And, you know, we continued the running gag of Empire Strikes Back references in this movie, I felt like.
Oh, yeah? I didn't catch it. What was it?
It was, you know, it's like the first thing when Darren Cross is shrinking to microscopic. Microscopic. I can get this word. Yeah, when Darren Cross is shrinking to microscopic size because Scott destroyed his regulator, you know, the first thing to go is his right arm.
Oh, okay.
So, like, the first thing just to shrink into his body.
Yep.
So, it's, you know, he joins the club of people who have lost an arm during Phase 2.
Yeah, that's more subtle than a lot of the people, you know, because he was in the process of dying anyway. But that's cool that if that's the... if that was their little homage there.
That's something we need Kevin Feige to confirm in an interview. I was like, yeah, we intentionally slipped in a Luke Skywalker reference into every single thing this season.
So on a scale of 1 to 5 ants instead of shields, how would you place this one?
I'm going to give it 3.5 ants.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you know, it's for me, like it's on par with Iron Man 3. It's on par with Thor: The Dark World.
Mm-hmm.
Like Thor: The Dark World, the big bad, does not get as much screen time or his death as he absolutely deserved. But it's still a great film
to
watch.
Movie.
It's
yeah.
still absolutely worth your money, whether you see it in IMAX or just in 2D.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth going to see. and it's worth supporting these characters. I don't know if we'll get Iron Man 2, but we are definitely going to see Iron Man.
Ant-Man 2.
Yes. I don't know if we're going to get Ant-Man 2, but I think we're going to see more of Ant-Man as things go on, not just in Civil War, but in other films.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a good support character. He's not the tank that's going to be out front.
Right.
But I would put it at a 3.5 as well. I think overall I liked it a little bit better than you did, but I think I liked Age of Ultron a little less than you did. but I am
admittedly biased.
Yes, you're biased because it's got your boy Vision in it. So I understand. Yeah.
That's going to be my first superhero, so...
I understand. Well, Coulson's kind of a superhero, kind of.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But yeah, so, 3.5, it was very good, it was a lot of fun, it's worth going to see at the movies. I personally don't think that the extra expense, for one of the fancy-schmancy movie theaters or IMAX or 3D would necessarily be worth it.
But, I mean, unless the movie theater itself is fancy-fancy, like my boss who went to one where you had, electric recliners
yes.
and lit coasters for your
yeah.
drinks.
Yeah, in fact...
Then it's worth it.
Yeah, that actually sounds like the movie where I saw Winter Soldier, which is actually just down the way from me. It's Cine Bistro in Brookhaven, Atlanta.
Yeah.
So 3.5 for me. I guess that about wraps us up. I will be doing the Earth Station 1 podcast this week, talking about Ant-Man as well. So if you're interested, tune in over there to hear my ideas, as well as Mike and Ashley, their resident film historian type person. And our next episode is going to be all about cosplay, sort of going into the Dragon Con season. We're going to be talking about that. So I am
and
very
I will
excited.
Be denying that time is counting down to Dragon Con and insisting that I have all the time in the world to finish my costumes.
Indeed. All right, well, that's going to be in about another 2 weeks. Again, my apologies to everybody for not getting episodes out as fast as I wanted to in July, but we're back on track now, and I am looking forward to seeing all of you guys in about 2 weeks.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.